Hey everyone, Susan Ball here. Welcome to the Authentically Me, Who the Hell Am I Anyway Summit. Tonight's guests are Scott and Emily McKay, professional dating and relationship coaches, authors, podcasters, and founders of X and Y Communications, which empowers men and women to take their relationship from good to great. So welcome Scott and Emily to our summit. We're so happy to have you here. And tonight's topic is all about the power of authenticity and communication and relationships. And I'm certain that you have talked to people about that in your time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're glad to be here, Susan. I guess people are wondering who the hell are we anyway. So I'm glad you gave us an intro.
Thank you. We're glad to be here. This is exciting.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. So authenticity, how important is it in a relationship?
Nothing, not at all, right?
you know what's really interesting is at the beginning of a relationship, I'm not sure people even prize authenticity unless they're really comfortable in their own skin and believe confidently in their power to be attractive. Because, you know, you always want to put your best foot forward. You want the first date to go well. And I think that the danger there is that you're going to not be who you really are. You know, everybody always says, oh, just be yourself. And see, people for whom just being themselves isn't working detest that advice because they're like, I am, and it's not working. But, you know, I mean, ultimately, if you are who you really are and you relax, take a deep breath, and you are authentically the person you're supposed to be, you're going to find one of two things. You're going to find you need to do some work on being what we call a person who deserves what you want. Meaning, you know, you're the kind of person who the other person you really want to attract will in turn be attracted to. Or you're going to find someone you really get it with. I mean, someone, you, the two of you get each other. And that's a lot better than, you know, attracting people who get along with the inauthentic version of you, because I don't think that's ever going to last long term.
Right. And being, you know, the best person first foot forward is important, because if you, you know, on your worst behavior, everyone's going to think, if this is your best, what's your worst? And they're not understanding that's your worst. So even though you are, you know, putting on your best in the very beginning, which everybody does, you that's still important, because that's what everyone's perception is of you until they get to know you as deeply of who you are and your likes and dislikes and all your interesting little nuances about you.
All the quirks.
Think of us as guys. We don't even get to wear makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess unless you're like Marilyn Manson or the guy from The Cure or something.
Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
You can rock makeup.
Yeah. Although the new look is the eyeliner.
Oh, yeah, like the Pirates of the Caribbean thing. Yeah, that's the new look for all the guys in Jordan, too, right?
Right,
Middle Eastern guys, that's the new makeup deal for them. Anyway, we digress.
We do.
You don't want to wear makeup on dates. You want to be authentic, but only if you're a guy, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that I find talking to people and when I'm coaching people is the thing that I try to express to them is that you attract what you're putting out there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You have to be who you want to attract. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, not only would we agree with that, I mean, it's our URL. I mean, it's deservewhatyouwant.com.
Exactly.
Most dating advice out there, most relationship advice out there, Susan, is get what you want. You already deserve it. There's no heavy lifting. You should have this person come to you and bestow upon you everything that you want them to do for you. Here's a man who will drop everything, never look at a woman again, and, you know, basically hand over his credit card and let you go shopping. If you're a guy, hey, look, you don't, this woman's just going to spread her legs for you because you said two simple words. That's dating advice nowadays, and it's contrary to what actually works. It feeds the narcissism of postmodern world filled with Twitter and Facebook, but it doesn't get to the heart of a matter, which is what really establishes a solid long-term relationship. And that's being the kind of person that the person you want to attract will in turn be attracted to.
That's right. Yeah. And that is not, people are looking for the fast and furious answer. And that's how it comes.
Yeah. The easy button.
What?
The easy button.
The easy button. And it doesn't work that way because relationships are long-term. So if you go in there fake, it's a fake relationship.
Exactly.
Right.
And too many people want to do that because it's quick and easy and it's, you know, what I want. This is what I want. And people are going to have to, you know, bow down and kiss my feet and do what I ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Not
at least it doesn't. If it does work, it's dysfunctional, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like someone is optimistic and generous and the other person's a raging narcissist and someone's just getting trampled underfoot, you know, and that's not a relationship. That's abuse, you know? So.
Yeah. And that's the kind of coaching that I do is exactly that emotion, women who find themselves in those relationships where they're being emotionally abused. And a lot of it is because they don't have the confidence to step up and say, hey, you, that's enough.
That's right.
Right. It's not gender specific. There are plenty of guys in the same boat.
That's true.
And yeah, sometimes people, they're so used to attracting that kind of dysfunctional relationship in their life that they see it as normal. Maybe it's what they grew up with in their family. And it's like, okay, this is how mom and dad are. This is what, you know, a relationship is supposed to look like. This is how a family is supposed to be. And of course, television has built comedy upon ironic humor for so many years that dysfunction is just funny, you know, in the media. So, hey, you know, this is what we should be. This is what I'm comfortable with. Therefore, this is what I, you know, this is who I am and what I'm about. And then meanwhile, the person who would seek to be, you know, kind of an abuser in that regard would say, oh, look, there's a person who welcomes someone like me. Here's someone who will put up with my shenanigans because they see it as normal. This is a slam dunk. And then you get that kind of dysfunctional relationship. Whereas if you have two people who are optimistic and generous, right, and who mean well and are givers and of sound mind and all of that, you end up with a wonderful relationship because the two of you are coming from a position of adding value to each other rather than just taking, taking, taking. But, you know, perhaps the irony there is that being an optimistic, generous person can either land you in the worst relationship ever or the best relationship ever, depending, like you said, Susan, so eloquently, on your own mindset towards what a relationship should look like.
So you could be the best person of yourself, be yourself, and still land in a bad relationship.
Yeah, you bet. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that for me, I've known lots of women over the years who have gone out on dates, and they're not even close to what they are in reality when they step out the door.
I think I dated all of those women.
Yeah, they're putting on so many airs. They're trying so hard to be something they're not, mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's not going to get you anywhere.
No,
it's emptiness.
Right. Exactly.
It's emptiness, and it's not what you build a relationship on. And the other thing I think I want to talk about that I think is so important is that in a relationship where you're authentic, where you start out at the same level and you have the same values, you build each other up.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we say, you know, 1 + 1 in our relationship equals 5, 10, or 25.
I like
you know,
that.
If you're trying to get something from the other person all the time, the most you're ever going to be able to expect is what you're trying to manipulate out of them.
And eventually that emotional piggy bank will be empty.
Oh, most definitely. But see, if the two of you actively give to each other, then you're going to get all kinds of unexpected, wonderful additions to your life and value because you're actively giving to each other. So that bank account, if you want to speak about it in transactional terms, which I don't necessarily use, so it's pure metaphor, of course. But, you know, that bank account gets loaded up, you know, in ways that you don't even expect.
And the two of you will reap bountifully for it.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I like that message very much because if you go into it and you're not yourself, you just get the life sucked right out of you. Both of you do. It's a no-win situation for both of you involved right. in the relationship.
That's right.
So what would be, if you were talking to somebody and they wanted to meet Mr. Right or Mrs. Right or whoever they want to meet, what would be the advice you'd say to them? They're going out to meet somebody and they're going on their first date.
Well, go in with a positive attitude, first of all. I mean, you got to believe that this is, you're meeting a genuinely wonderful person and that they want the best outcome and that you want the best outcome. And then you're just going to enjoy the evening. You do that, you can relax and be yourself and have fun. And the two of you will, you know, realize quickly whether you two or ready for another date because it's going along great, or there's just no chemistry, and that's okay too.
Right. I think, unfortunately, by the time we get to be adults, someone of the other gender has treated us poorly. You know, we've been dumped, we've been abused in some way, verbally, physically, even sexually. And it's really easy to get really cynical about everybody of the other gender and play that blame game. And we prefer to think that, you know, men and women are a lot more alike than different. We're all human. If you cut me, I'm going to bleed. If her dog runs away, she's going to be upset. If either one of us win the lottery, we'll be thrilled. You know, so it's not that everybody of either gender is somehow deficient and the enemy. You know, you can't date the enemy. You know, you have to go out believing, okay, maybe this person could be a good, solid person. They're not necessarily a real version of them hiding under a rock who's going to be out to hurt them. So the first order of events is to go out expecting this human being on the other side of the table when you're out on a first date to be a decent human being. They're not all going to be a gold digger and terrible simply because they're female, and they're not all going to be liars and jerks and, you know,
abusers
mm-hmm. because they're men. Lately, there's been this rash of videos that paint men as all monsters, and we've got to hide that inner monster and somehow fight against it. And I'm a pox on that. I'm not a monster. I mean, contrary to what Qantas Airways in Australia has to say, you could sit me down next to an unaccompanied minor on their airplane, and I'm not going to assault that minor just because I'm a man. I mean, I'm a decent human being. I'm a father, you know. So, you know, people have to kind of shut down that adversarial nature on the media and really expect goodness to come from meetings with people. And see, that optimism up front will translate to coming off as a friendlier person who's easier to get along with. Because anytime you have that tension from the beginning, you know, you really can't expect a good outcome. So that's the importance of authentically expecting the best from the person you're on a date with.
Right. And then having compassion, because remember, because they're human, the other person that you're meeting, they're just as nervous as you are.
Oh, yeah.
They're having all these thoughts, not knowing if it's going to go bad, if it goes wrong, he's going to fall, his fault. And if you go into it going, okay, what can I do to help ease his pain? You know, how can I cheer this situation up? Or cheer, be his cheerleader, or your cheerleader, and make this a really great evening.
You know, perhaps the irony there is most men believe that if they mess up just a little bit on a first date, it's over. She's going to reject them. Whereas they also believe that if they come off like this guy who's really suave and gets everything right, the woman's going to think we're a player, and she's obviously relationship-oriented because she's a woman, so she'll reject us too. So men are afraid of being too polished and of making any mistake on a first date. And it, of course, that's a recipe for certain doom, you know. And of course, women are always wondering, you know, do I have lipstick on my teeth? Did I say something dumb? You know, and meanwhile, both people, because we're nervous on a first date, are so inside our own heads that we forget to relax and think, oh, how can I help this other person feel more comfortable? And if you help the other person relax, that other person will be more authentic. Then you can relax, you can be all authentic, and the date's going to go better because
you won't have two robots.
You won't have two robots.
I love that because when you think about it, we're often very self-centered. We don't think about the other person and what they're feeling on the first date. Yeah. That's a very valid point. I love that. The other thing that I find talking to clients and talking to women, talking to family, men, is when the date doesn't go well or there isn't a second date, their self-esteem takes a bit of a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just saying, that one didn't work, and I'm just going to move on, it just wasn't meant to be, they get very self-reflective about what was wrong with me, what did I do wrong. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think a lot of women, especially, I know lots of them who won't even date because they feel like something's wrong with them or they're tired of the disappointments and they're tired of feeling bad about themselves, and they fail to realize not everybody on this planet was meant to be our soulmate.
Right.
And so if the date doesn't work out, that's better than getting married and finding out this was a bad idea and getting divorced. You know?
Yeah, we're tracking it out just a little bit. Yes.
If you look forward into the future, you might fail to realize that was a good thing. It didn't work out.
Right. And you know, at the baseline level, Susan, you couldn't be more on the money with that. I think people, even when they meet and get to know each other for the first time, a guy may ask a woman out and she could have any number of reasons for not wishing to pursue that opportunity that have nothing to do with the guy. But, you know, our egos get hurt and, you know, men and women both feel rejected. I will tell you how deep this rabbit hole goes. I get conversations with guys probably an average of once a month. Okay. Where, and you'll understand when I tell you the story, how frequent that really is. Okay. Cause it's a very specific story. Boy meets girl, girl's having a good time on the date with the guy. It's probably the third or fourth date maybe. And she goes, "Hey, why don't we go back to my place and watch a movie?" And lo and behold, they get back to her place. And for example, "Oh, you know, my only TV that works is actually in the bedroom. Is that okay?" So boy and girl go into the bedroom. Boy sits dutifully on the bed and watches TV with her. She goes, "You know, excuse me, I'm going to go in the bathroom and slip into something more comfortable."
Oh, dear.
So she goes into the bathroom, comes out with just black lingerie on, like a Victoria's Secret model. And then she just plops down next to the bed next to him and is like, "Oh, okay, now I feel so much better." And then the guy's like, "Okay, good. Should we keep watching the same thing we were watching, or do you want to switch to something else now?" And sooner than later, girl gets upset and kicks boy out of the friggin' house. Or, you know, the movie's over and nothing happened and she's at his place and she slams the door behind him. And he's like, "What did I do wrong? I was a perfect gentleman. Don't women want me to be this gentleman? I mean, God, I don't want to be rapey. You know, I don't want to, you know, get accused of being some kind of rapist because, you know, I can't touch women. They don't want me to touch them. You know, I've seen all the videos. I've seen all the Twitter feeds that say, oh my God, if I simply say hello to a woman." And meanwhile, the woman feels utterly rejected is what the problem is. I mean, my gosh, she's made herself sexually vulnerable. And clearly, it got worse as she got friskier. I mean, the guy already was, he's willing to go out on a date with her and talk to her. But I mean, gosh, we're here alone in my place and he doesn't want to kiss me or anything. Then I basically get naked for him and he does even less. So she's thinking, you know, she's body shaming herself. Mm-hmm. She's thinking, oh my God, I mean, I'm a horrible, ugly human being. And meanwhile, I tell this story to the guy like, "Hey, you know what? Guys will come to me with this story." And they'll say, "She rejected me. She kicked me out of her house. See, I lost there." And I'm like, "You rejected her. You know how rejected she must feel stripping down to her underwear and you looking at her like, huh, okay, let's watch, you know, some reruns of Blacklist instead." You know, that is a woman's very vulnerable point. But see, both the man and the woman in a situation like that are so buried inside their head that they can't even comprehend the position of the other person. There's no way in hell that woman would even believe me if I said, "No, it was him, not you." She'd go, "Oh, great, nice try. Way to, you know, kind of assuage my emotions." Exactly. But what guy isn't going to jump all over me if I'm wearing black lingerie alone in my bedroom with him? And they just don't understand what men are facing in terms of us being shamed for simply being heterosexual males with desire. Right. So we're taught to, you know, don't even show interest. You know,
for fear that if you do, you get rejected.
That's how, like I said, that's how deep that rabbit hole goes. So let's go back to our couple at the first date level. All they're doing is sitting across the table talking to each other. All the things that are going through their heads relative to what's going to make them feel rejected. How do I get into I mean, dating is survival. It's self-preservation mode. I was talking to someone who's a matchmaker in New York City, and she talks about the biggest complaint there. And I've seen this even with people I coach in New York City also. Is they go out on dates and the man and the woman are trying to alpha each other. They're fighting for emotional and, you know, emotional supremacy at the dinner table, you know? And it's like, okay, I'm going to ask you a bunch of interview questions. No, I'm going to ask you a bunch of interview questions. And the questions, you know, it's how can I top your interview questions? And that is the antithesis of being authentic. I mean, if you think about it, it's just sort of jejune. It's like, who does that? I mean, that's like being emotionally a 10-year-old. I mean, can't you understand that you've got to be warm towards each other? I always talk to people about warmth, warmth, warmth. And that ain't it, you know.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine. You're mentioning that. I couldn't even imagine being on a date and somebody's asking interview style questions. I'd be like, can we talk real things, like real life, like, you know?
Oh, I mean, this is an interview. This is an interview, and you're not even asking me interview questions. So, I mean, good grief. What kind of place does that have on a date, for God's sake?
Like, that's not even realistic.
No. Uh-uh.
Because that doesn't even get to the core values of a person.
Right.
You can't get there with interview questions.
It's not a job interview.
No. Uh-uh.
No.
you have to figure out whether the two of you even get along in your authentic forms before you can even get to how many children do you want to have. I mean, what's the point, you know? Right.
A long time ago, it was dad that would, you know, it was the daughter who worried about when her boyfriend meets her dad because, you know, what questions is he going to ask? What's your intentions with my daughter?
Right. And well, now what are your intentions? Women will ask that on dates.
On the first date.
Yeah. So what are your intentions?
Like, what?
Thinly veiled, you know. I mean, you know, it's almost like you're in a war zone and you have to kind of hide around each turn with your gun drawn before you even, you know, answer the next question, because it's a minefield out there. You know, it's like, you know, woo. Yeah.
This is so funny. I mean, I'm out of the dating realm. Thank you.
Us too. You're welcome.
But that being said, I mean, there's a lot, especially women who are coming out of bad relationships or men out of bad relationships. I mean, they're just so tender, and any little thing will set them off. Any little thing will dump their self-esteem all over again. That's just the way it goes. But when go ahead.
No, I just want to say one thing, because I'm not sure we really addressed your last question about 5 minutes ago. You know, people's self-esteem being tied to that lack of interest on the other side. You know, that, you know, with more reps and once you get some people who are interested in you, it's amazing how that little bit of experience really goes a long way, at least till your next dry spell. But like what I tell people is, you know, just because you're not someone's type, either physically or personality-wise or whatever, doesn't mean you're this horrible person. I was just reading this morning about this little actress in Hollywood who she can't post anything on Instagram without being body shamed and being called fat, and it's kind of become her pet, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the thing, like it's like her thing that she treats as her big charity thing.
Oh, you know?
It's her cause.
It's her cause. There you go.
And she's got like, you know, a website, you know, that's anti-body shaming women. And I looked at this little actress and I go, she is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, she's shaped like a woman. She's not, you know, she looks all female all the time to me. And I'm thinking, you know, body shame her. She couldn't be more, there's nothing wrong there, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's really weird how people really just, or if someone doesn't like me, they're the ones who are correct. All the people who are giving me the validation and telling me I'm sexy or beautiful or interesting or smart or whatever it is they're telling me, they're all wrong. They're all just trying to make me feel good. It's the person who got in there, who told the truth, which is, you know, that I'm not so good. They're the ones who are really right.
Right.
You know.
Everybody has this bubble in their head, you know, of what they think that nobody likes about them. I'm too fat, or I'm too short, I'm too this, I have too many kids. Could be anything. There's a billion different reasons why somebody might not like themselves.
Right.
And if you go to a store, just kind of picture what's above their heads. What's in that bubble? What is it that they are most concerned about themselves?
Kind of like a cartoon bubble, like you'd see in a comic strip. Yeah.
Right.
What's going on inside that you can't see because it's so carefully camouflaged?
Right. So we all have that bubble, whether it's real or not real, and oftentimes not real. But I got a hair on my face. So anyway.
I thought you shaved.
I did, but shh. Anyway. So we all have that bubble to be afraid of. And we are so busy trying to hide it and not be real, because if they find out, they're not just simply not going to like me. They're going to have a disdain for me. You know, the rejection is going to be so painful. Meanwhile, they fail to realize no one cares.
Well, this is really a great point you brought up, Emily, because what happens,
it is. I like it.
Whatever it is about yourself that you can't stand, whatever you look in the mirror and see, or whatever you look at your life and see as a deficiency, I think it's human nature, men and women alike, by the way, that we're going to automatically assume that is the one worst thing that can possibly happen for you to be repulsive to the opposite gender. I mean, you know, I'm not very tall, so I get a lot of guys who are sure that if they were 6 feet tall, they'd get all the women, but because they're 5'5", they get none of them. Or, you know, because I lost all my hair, women are gonna all can't stand me, because, you know, every guy on TV, if he's bald, he gets made fun of. Or women are like, you know, I can't believe how thick my ankles are. Guys are gonna take one look at me and they're never gonna want me again. And it's like, guys aren't looking at your ankles, honey, you know? And meanwhile, you can go to a shopping mall and you can see all these people who fit your description of yourself, who that you detest so much inside your own mind, and they're perfectly okay. They're going around, you know, dating and relating. I actually had a guy come to me not too long ago, and he talked about how this limiting belief of his was just so profoundly devastating. And I kind of rubbed my chin and looked out and said, God, I got that too. You know, I got the same thing he deals with. I mean, what he considers to be this devastating limited belief, I've gone through my entire life without even considering it would be even remotely unattractive, you know? And so it's just amazing how we get in our heads and we've decided because we're deficient in this one area, especially if it's an area we can't change or it's really difficult to change.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell we'll ever be attracted to anybody. And yet, here's the great irony. People who are perfect, like people who come off as Mr. or Ms. Perfect, are just detested by everybody else. Nobody wants Mr. and Ms. Perfect because they're like, I can't compete with that, because inside their own cartoon bubble, they see what they don't like. They see their own insecurities. And then they go, that person just makes me feel worse about myself. So
they're too perfect. They won't want me.
Right. Or that. Yeah. Or they're too perfect. Yeah. They'll cheat on me, you know? And therefore you have this incredible dichotomy. If you're too if you have a limiting belief, if there's some way that you can't be perfect, you're never going to be attractive to anybody. Yet if you're too perfect, you're never going to attract anybody either. Yet we have 7.5 billion people on this planet. Maybe that limiting belief isn't as important as, you know, to your dating failure as you maybe think it is.
And to my last point, so that we can wrap it up on a high note. We're speaking about physical appearance and the importance of that and or how much value we put on that now, physical appearance, society, media, all of that kind of stuff. And I think what I want to say is that authenticity, if you're coming out, like you said, starting off and you're going in with a genuine happiness to meet this person and compassion and all of those other things, they outweigh physical appearance.
Well, make no mistake, I wasn't only talking about physical experience and physical appearance when I talk about people's limiting beliefs.
No, I know that.
I'm too shy, my voice sounds funny, I didn't go to college. Yeah. All of those sort of things can also weigh into it. But one thing I would say about physical appearance is it would be relatively rare for us to have been born our own type. Like we look in the mirror and go, huh, I'm perfectly physically attractive. But people do have completely different physical types. Some people are more attractive. You know, like I said before, I look at that actress who gets body shamed and I go, wow, she shouldn't change a thing. She shouldn't lose an ounce, you know. And yet people, if they wish they were different themselves, they automatically, again, you know, they extrapolate that out to the entire population, thinks that, you know, I'm not their type either, right? So I think that's kind of the little mental trick we play on ourselves for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? It stops you from having a really good relationship. It stops you from finding true love. It stops you from a lot of things by thinking you're not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Right. You know, I'm never going to be Sean Connery.
Oh, really?
I'm Rudy,
really?
Okay?
I'm so disappointed.
I'm Michael J. Fox. I'm the cute little guy. You know, that's all. That's who I've always been. Meanwhile, you know, she's never going to be, you know,
Kim Kardashian?
Kim Kardashian, you know.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow. You know, she's Mary Lou Retton or Valerie Bertinelli, you know. But, hey, I love Valerie. I think those are my two celebrity crushes. So she comes along and I couldn't have issued an RFP to God for a woman any more than, you know, better than she came out. She's exactly what I always wanted.
Yeah, you know why I like him.
I mean, you know, that's me. That's what I like. So, you know, some other guy may go, really, her? I mean, you know, in 11 years, I've never had anybody, you know, say, how in the world can you be dating a dating coach when you're married to her? But, you know, I mean, some other guy might like a 5'11" blonde woman with, you know, a different body type. And that's his prerogative. But we're never going to be everybody else's cup of tea. What I tell guys all the time, Susan, is look, if you're feeling like all women, some women don't like you, or one woman says, I'm sorry, you're too this or that, and I won't go out with you, which, by the way, ladies, don't ever do that to a guy. We have feelings. You know, sometimes you can set guys back a decade by blowing them out of the water, by just nailing their limiting belief like that.
We've had a few of them come to us that way.
Oh, true. Damage. And women, too. You know, mm-hmm. Like, you know, they show interest in a guy and he looks at her and goes, yeah, you're just too fat. Sorry. And she's like, oh my God. And she's devastated for a decade. Don't do that to people. That's not fair. But I tell guys to go to one of these men's magazine dating sites, like your FHM, Maxim, AskMen.com, and look at the 100 most desirable women, you know, that they voted on this year. And I guarantee you 30 or 40 of them will do nothing for you. They just won't be your type at all. For me, it's more like 50 or 60 of them, because I just don't like that painted up supermodel skinny twiggy look. I just don't like women like that. So, you know, if those are the 100 most desirable women, by the way, I don't know how anyone who is the most, one of the 100 most desirable women in the world can be a drug addict in rehab. I don't know how that makes women desirable at the level of the highest in the world, but apparently that doesn't matter to some of these magazines, but I don't want to digress. The point is, they're not all going to be your type. And guess what? They don't care, because they're one of the most 100 desirable women in the world. They got plenty of guys to make up the slack for where you're not interested. And I think that's how we need to look at ourselves. We're not ever going to be anybody's cup of tea. But the more we're deserving what I want, like I talk about and Emily talks about, the more you're going to be attractive to a larger cross-section of people as you become more attractive. And I think, you know, as you work on that, you'll be the better and better version of your authentic self.
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier getting past looks. Now, if you are that wonderful person that does deserve this wonderful relationship, whatever imperfections you might have, whether real or perceived or not, they can be overcome. I used to want a guy who was 6 foot tall. You know, if he was under 5'10", it was off limits. And along came Scott, and he's not that tall.
Not even that tall.
But, you know, he has this wonderful charismatic personality, and he has this wonderful heart, and he's just this great person that I just love and just find him wonderful. That
it worked out well for me, actually, that she feels that way.
Right. Yeah. And he made, you know, being not as tall a benefit. So you can overcome whatever it is that you're afraid of that someone won't like.
That's all. Sure. You were just getting on a roll about how wonderful I am. You should keep
talking. That's okay. I agree with you. My first three bad relationships, I always liked tall, dark, and handsome, all failed. My husband now is a blonde. Never thought I'd like a blonde. Mm-hmm. There you go. It works.
There's always hair color.
I know. I can dye his hair. Yeah. So, I know that people will want to get in touch with you or listen to your podcast or read your book. So before we say goodbye, you want to give everybody a little insight into how they can find you?
Well, sure. First of all, you can grab the free special report that Emily has for you. Actually, it's an audio program on how to take control of your dating life.
Nice.
And that's at the link on your site, and it's www.keystobliss.com/bonus. And while you're there, get in on Emily's newsletter for women. Sometimes I guest write on it, so it's actually both of ours. And we'll also give you a book called Dealing with Breakups. And this isn't how to get over someone. It's how to break up with someone when the time is right. Because there's lots of books written on the former, but hardly any on the latter. I'll give that to you free. And you also get Emily's book, Letters from Friends, where she answers actual letters from her email newsletter subscribers. And it covers almost everything. It's just a wonderful resource. You'll get all of those free when you show up.
Awesome. It has been a real pleasure, and I'm so happy that you joined our summit, and I think authenticity is a very important topic in dating and relationships, communication, all of those things. So thank you again.
Have a pleasant night. Thank you.
We genuinely thank you.
Yes. Oh. This is really enjoyable, and it's such a great and very important topic.
Thank you. Thank you so much.